Speaker, Tracy.
Which one do I talk into?
All right.
This is the most intimidating part, is the freaking microphones are being taped. Because I have done quite a few meetings, and I'm very nervous. Stop smiling. My network wanted me to go first because they said, you know, my peeps are here, they got to go eat dinner. So I asked if I could go first. The way I got asked to do this meeting was, there's two comedy shows this weekend, one last night and one tonight, and I called the committee. I called numbers. I mean, I called 50,000 times. I obsessed and compulsed to try to get a hold of somebody. Then finally, this woman named Carol called me back and said, I just want to know whether the comedians are the same as Friday night and Saturday night, or if they're different, I'd like to buy both nights, because when I come here, I want to be entertained. And she says, I guess they're different. How long do you have clean? Going on 9 years. And she's like, well, can you do a workshop for me? I'm like, let me call you back. I got to call my sponsor. And my sponsor said, oh, yeah, do it. I said, okay, Sue, thank you. But anyway, this is about parenting in recovery. And this is a great topic for me because I'm a mother of two, and I have cousins that I raised in my beginning of my recovery as well, because their father was in active addiction, and I was blessed by God to take care of them. I don't know why I'm crying. It's just a moment of, like, I'm a miracle. And we're all a miracle looking in the mirror now, and we have a program, and you know, and once you get clean, you're going to find out how many issues you have and workshops you need to work on. And this is basically one of them, and there's no program for parenting, and you just do the best you can. And I'm trying. But anyway, when I tell a little bit about my experience and my active addiction and what my son dealt with, he's 20 years old now. And my daughter, who is my recovery baby, she's 6. And when I was 19 years old, I went into my first program as a result of my addiction. And from there, I've been in 14 or 15 rehabs after that. I got pregnant when I was 20, and my son was born in 91. I went into second Genesis. And that's when the beginning of me being without my son, I turned him over to his dad and his family. And it's been a long road from there. My son didn't grow up with me. In my active addiction, I would take him to areas of copying. I would leave him in his diaper, wet. The only focus I had was to get high, whether he was in the back starving. When he was 3 years old, I remember the moment when he was in my mother's arms, and I went to Hope House, which is in Crownsville, Maryland, and they told me that I need to go into a long-term program, and I ended up in Rockville to go to Second Genesis. They accepted me to go to a program there. And I accepted. I know I needed help. I remember dropping my son off the last time I seen him, and I saw him. He was 3 years old. Mommy, mommy, mommy. And I knew it was for the best for my son to be with his dad and his parents and my mom. I went into Second Genesis. I was there for 9 months. I probably seen him two or three times during that, just visitation, because it was so far away. And when I got out of there, I got kicked out of Second Genesis for drinking coffee. It wasn't drinking coffee. It was lying about drinking coffee. And I got kicked out of there, and my mother wouldn't let me come back, so I ended up being in Montgomery County in active addiction. from there, it was a big blur. I ended up in Baltimore on the streets of Pratt and Monroe, Baltimore, Maryland. And the only time I would call my son was when I was down and out and didn't have any drugs in my system and I thought of him. So I called my mom. Mom, have you heard from Vincent? I'd like to talk to him. No, but he'll be here Saturday. So that's how my life with him until he was 8 years old was. I called him on the phone and I said, Mommy's sick. Can't see you now. So anyway, that was my parenting in addiction. I wasn't one. The guilt, the shame that I could even do that to my kid. When he was 8 years old, I decided that it was time to get clean. It wasn't just a decision I made. Okay, I'm going to get clean today. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I developed hepatitis through using hepatitis C. I ended up in the hospital. My mom had to come and help me, and I had tracks on my arm, and that was kind of like a spiritual awakening, like, oh, my God, my spirit's gone. My morals are gone. I need to become right for my son. I need to become right. I was so sick I couldn't walk to use. I was so sick I was jaundiced. I didn't have any energy to use. So I had no choice but to get clean. So I ended up in a woman's recovery house, and I used in there and got kicked out of there. But 2 days from now, April 18th, I'll be celebrating 10 years clean. And so 10 years ago, April 18th, I decided not to use anymore. I put my hands up. I surrendered. And my son, through his teenage years, still lived with his grandmother, my ex-husband's mom. She raised him. And I left him be. But when I first got clean, I decided that I needed to get involved. I needed to get him, substitute teachers or what do you call them, training people to come to your house and help him tutor. Because his reading level was not well. It's my fault. I had to do something, you know. But he wasn't interested, you know. And that's what I did in the beginning of my recovery. I tried to show initiative of being a mother and getting a tutor for him. Didn't work. They pushed his ass through school. Thank God he graduated by the skin of his teeth. But he wasn't college material, so I accepted that. But he has 3 good jobs right now. He's 20. As a matter of fact, today he called me. Ma, what are you doing? You having fun? Yeah, the weather's kind of bad. He goes, what are you doing? I said, sleeping. He goes, well, you're going to sleep your vacation away. I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm in the hospital. I'm like, what? He said, I wrecked my bike last night. As we speak, he's getting a cast put on his leg. So what kind of parent am I in Ocean City and he's in the hospital, you know? But anyway, what can I do? Back to my son in recovery. The tutoring was there, and when he became 14 years old, he wasn't, you know, coming around his parents. He wasn't interested. Until he was 17 years old, he wanted to move back in with me. And today, he still lives with me. And my power of example. Oh. Thank you. It's very difficult to know your son only for a few years, like really know him. And I can't tell him what to do anymore because he's 20, you know. So I'm just there for him. So anyway, let me talk about when I first got clean. My grandmother was very, very sick. She was about 8 years ago. She died of emphysema from smoking. And she was taking care of her son's kids, which was Brittany and Eddie, and they were my cousins. And I lived with my grandmother, they lived with my grandmother, and her son lived in the basement. He was in active addiction. She became very sick and couldn't take care of her grandkids anymore. So I kind of moved in, and my grandmother was a very big enabler. She allowed my uncle to continue to do what he was doing in her basement, and finally, I met Steve, and he moved in, and he gave me the courage to help kick my uncle out, and we decided that we're going to step in and help her with the kids. Then my grandmother died, and I got temporary custody. One had emotional problems, was on Ritalin and you name it, with all kinds of drugs for his emotional and behavioral problems. And Brittany was very, very quiet, shy, timid, would hide in the corner. And she was like, I promised my grandmother I would never let nothing happen to Brittany at all. So anyway, when Big Eddie, he finally got his life together, I feel that because I didn't help enable him, he decided to get clean. I don't think, you know, God did that, but if I didn't help kick his ass out, he would still be using it. So when he got his shit together, I said, you can have the boy, but I'm keeping Brittany. You know, she's been through a lot. So anyway, Brittany was with me since 7 to like 13 or 14 years old, and when she became 13, I didn't like her anymore. I did not like her ass anymore. She would become mouthy, and you know, my son still lived with his grandmother at this time, but I was taking care of Brittany. And one day, lo and behold, Brittany defied me and threw a phone at me, and I went in there and I fucking went into a rage, and I backed her in her ass and I cut her face with my ring. The next day, she went to the school and told the counselor that I punched her in her face 3 or 4 times out of anger. And lo and behold, at this time, my daughter was like 2 or 3. I had had her. It was her and Brittany. And Brittany told the counselors at school that I did that. And then social services investigated my ass. And that went through and on. And I became, you know, and the thing of it is my character defects are still running wild. I've worked my 6-step, but they still run wild. I'm trying to become a better person. It's not easy. Parenting, there's no guide to do it, you know? I thought, you know, I couldn't control her anymore, and I hated that. I felt powerless, you know, and my rage got the better of me, and I reacted. That is my problem. I react. Getting better, but... So anyhow, Brittany moved out, and she moved in with her sister, and I got a child abuse charge through social services. And that's in recovery. I mean, I'm not, you know, the spiritual giant. I still have issues, and I'm sick, and I still need to be here. That's what, you know, if we weren't sick, we wouldn't be in here, you know. And I'm glad that I could share that I'm not all that in a bag of chips. I still need help. I still need to share about how my mind thinks. My perceptions are fucked up. You know, and my daughter, she remembers that incident with Brittany. And one time, me and Steve discipline her. We yell. We try not to spank. But when I, like, react and spank her ass, the Brittany situation pops up in my mind. I better stop. One time I went and pushed her on her shoulder, and she went to school the next day. She told me she went to the school the next day and told a teacher that I punched her in her face. I called the teacher the next day, and the teacher says, she never said that. I said, well, Mama Donner said, she's only 5. Oh, 6. She just turned 6. But she told the teacher I punched her. And so I finally let that go, and I'm like, that situation has to change, or I'm going to lose my kid. You know, I have to work on my anger. I have to work on my character defects. I have to work on my everything. I'm powerless. I'm powerless over kids. I'm powerless over boyfriends. I'm powerless over everything but my reactions. And the only thing I do is be a power of example and do the next right thing and work on my recovery. To do the next right thing in the morning and allow God to guide me. You know, I really believe that it was God who got me into this meeting because, you know, Carol didn't know me. You know, and it was God's way. You know, I'm going 10 years and 2 days and it's time to make some changes in my life. How long do I have? Because I'm running out of things to say. He's not there to tell me I only have 5 minutes. You know, just keep coming back. Don't keep any secrets in. Share. Because help is out there everywhere you turn. There's miracles that occurs. Anyway, Brittany went with their sister. She's doing pretty good. She has she's going to college. She visits me quite often, and we apologize to each other. My son, he's driving me crazy with his motorcycle crap. And my daughter's in sixth grade, and she's just the freaking insane shit's just beginning. You know, I'm 42 years old. It's time for me to have my own little, you know, life, but this is my, God have put me here, and God is allowing me to, you know, rekindle what I didn't have with my son. And it's tough. You know, everything's about the child now. It's not all about me. You know, I'd like it to be, but it isn't. And I have, you know, sponsees, and sometimes I feel like they're parent. And I feel like I'm everybody's mother right now. I really took the place of my grandmother. My grandmother left me her house. I have a full-time job and sponsees, and just my life is very, very full today. And do I have 5 minutes? Okay, I'm going to allow this gentleman here to share his experience, strength, and hope. And I'll keep coming back. Okay, and our second speaker, we're having Crawford. Right.
Yes. Hello. I'm Crawford, recovering addict. Hey, I'm cleaned by the grace of God and the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm very excited to be in here. Thank you. You get the coke services. I want to share a few things. Like I said, I was cleaned by the grace of God and the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm relishing in this opportunity to share on parenting and recovery. I've been in this fellowship 20 years, coming up on 20. I've been here 20 years. I'll celebrate 20 years in December. That's what I meant to say. I got clean in December of 1987. I want to share some things because in this journey, I've been fortunate enough and blessed to experience the 12 steps, work the principles to the best of my ability, do some things personally to develop me, become leadership in Narcotics Anonymous in my area, productive member of society. I'm a teacher by profession, multiple degrees, the things that we aspire to do. But I look back on my life and see that the greatest task that I have was to be a parent. I'm no longer subscribing to it's very, very difficult. I am no longer subscribing to that. I am not perfect. I am not trying to project that one. The difficulty is my resistance to stay in a process that I know works. When I was a little boy, I was born, like all of us, my mother, because of active addiction, she drank very heavily, and she was like 17 years old. My father was like 18, 19 years old, and not really knowing what they wanted to do in life, my mom used to leave me and go and do the things she wanted to do that was related to addiction, and my grandmother and grandfather, who is my father's mother and father, got word from my mother's mother that my mother was leaving me, and they came and got me. And from the time I was 18 months to 17, I was raised by my grandparents. And I want to say that through the grace of God, I'm glad, because my life would have been totally different. There's no question of whether my mother loved me. The question was her abilities because of addiction. My recovery has taken me away from the blame game. She do what people do that's an addiction. But I grew up in a loving, caring home. There were some pieces missing. You want to be with your biological. My grandmother was a wonderful person, but she was a substitute. My mind. And she loved me like no other. But I will say this, something I got from them that I got when I got the N.A. that I give to my children. That's a sense of belonging. You know, growing up, you hear songs, right? Remember this song, "If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right"? That's some sick shit. Remember that song, "What Love Got to Do With It"? That's some sick shit. Love has everything to do with it. I don't know what religion you into, spirituality, but in mine, God loved his son so much, and he loved us so much, that he gave his son. So, let me get back to my people. My grandfather and grandmother committed their life to me. It wasn't so much just "I love you" and you know, "I want you to be this." With love comes expectation, because it's an investment. Hey man, I worked the same job for 43 years. I went to the fourth grade, man. You going to college. And we're going to provide the essentials that make it necessary for you to grow. Now, I'm saying my mind is out of order because the natural process has been broken. Other people, that's their mother. That's their direct line. That's my grandmother. She's young at the time, but she's my grandmother. But I love her like no other, but she's my grandmother. And they tell me things and they show me things, but she's my grandmother. And I wanted to be my mom, but there's a piece missing. Parenting is a skill that you learn over time. And I'm one of those people who say what you do best is what you do most. And usually grandparents are better parents because they'd have had at least one generation to practice. Right. So I actually came out better. But in an underdeveloped child's mind, things go crazy. But anyway, they loved me. They loved me and gave me a sense of belonging, and they was honest with me. I'm talking about skills of parenting. Child has a sense of belonging. I belong to you. No matter what happens, your front, your back, I'm with you. But when you're wrong, I'm with you, but I'm going to tell you you're wrong. I'm not going down to school and beat up nobody. When I was in the first grade, because I'm old enough that you could spank kids when I went to school. My grandmother walked in and told the teachers, this is her first year teaching, just out of college. She said, "Honey, you're going to have to whip him." You know your children. It's called honesty. I know what's in you because 9 times out of 10, I put it there. I'm the model. So I know you're a little fast, slick with your mouth. I have to pop you every now and then. And you love me, so imagine what you're doing to other people. I develop a sense of dependence that I think is normal and natural for children to have. Children must be dependent, or they'll never know how to be independent. So I look to my grandfather as strength. My grandmother used to say, you remind me of your grandfather. My grandfather's from North Carolina, the type of guy that wear short pants and black socks with a hat on. I'm in North Philly. You all right? Same woman. Met at 13, stayed together till they died. Bring his money home Thursday. He got off 10 minutes to 4. He would be in the house every day, Monday through Friday, except Thursday. Thursday came in 4:20 because they were stopped by the bank, cash his check, put everything in an envelope, walk in the house. My grandmother would be preparing dinner. She would call me and my brother from inside the house, listen, go wash your hands. And come on down here and we're going to eat together. My grandfather would come in, walk up the steps, wash his, put his money down on the dresser, wash his hands, come back downstairs to eat with us. As we're eating, my grandmother would get up, go upstairs to the envelope. Take out all the money for the bills. All the money for us. Leave money for him to get back and forth to work, maintain his car, maintain his lifestyle. And I never heard him say to her, my money's short. Never heard him say, you spun too much on this. This is how I grew up. So I can't sit here and say, I don't understand commitment. I don't understand honesty. I didn't understand the love and the sense of belongingness. I saw something outside the door that excited me. And I went out there. Well, I left Philadelphia. I'm riding down to come down Ocean City. And you hear radio stations in Philadelphia. Every city has their radio stations. But the radio stations has a range. And as I start to get out of the range of my grandparents, it became static. And it became static until I didn't hear nothing. I heard what they were saying on the other side of the door. It wasn't that I wasn't giving it. And I went out there and addiction kicked my ass. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was happy to be here. Now, there are those people who will come up here and say, I like getting high. They ain't the speaker. And they probably need to be in a mental program more than Narcotics Anonymous. I did not like killing me. And I suggest they didn't either. It became the thought process. It became the way I lived. But I didn't like it. So when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I felt safe. I felt a sense of belonging. That's what I felt. And that's what allowed me to stay. To today, I make meetings on a regular basis because this is where I treat the disease of addiction. I never lost sight of that. Never. I watch folks get in relationships that are doomed the minute they say, how you doing? I'm not an angel and have had my experiences. Smart enough now to know is doomed. But that need to belong is there. And it can come many ways. We're talking about parenting. Because even though I learned some things and even though I had some things available to me, they have to kick in. The message in the steps are beautiful, but it has to kick in. You hear the message, but it has to kick in. You're right on your steps, but it has to kick in. 12 steps says it is meaningless unless you live it. It's a meaningless program unless you live it. It's words. Our actions bring the words to life. So listen to me. In our first step, it talks about a level of honesty that is essential. Now, honesty, in my mind, translates into acceptance. Anything that I don't accept, I'm not being honest about its reality. That's why I'm justifying it. Rationalizing it in the first step. That's why I can't accept powerless, because I don't want it to be real. I want it to be the way I want it to be. I want you to do what I say do. See, I like to feel a certain way. And sometimes the nature of children make you uncomfortable. So therefore, you're going to do what I say. I'm going to beat your ass. The question is not whether it's right or wrong. The question is how I feel. So we justify. And I remember, I'm going to talk about two children. I'm not going to talk about my oldest. The reason I'm not going to talk about my oldest is because I was fortunate in this sense, that her mother and I was able to share some things with her, and she grasped it. Now, I ain't taking credit for it. She grasped it, which means she was more like her mother than me. You know, when she graduated from the same university I graduated from. And, you know, people like to say, well, my daughter grasped it. And it wasn't because of me. I role modeled, but she made a choice. That's why I love this program. You have never made me do anything. You gave me a choice. Part of parenting is very simple. Give them the choice. Do they do it right? Hell no. They're just like you. I look at my son that's 18 sometimes, and I say, you from another motherfucking planet. Didn't I just say, yeah, you said it. Well, why didn't you do it? I am 6'2". I'm 220 pounds. I used to work at the post office. I'm divorced. I'm fucking angry. Do you know who you messing with? You will be on the front page of the fucking paper. And they look at you like, what's wrong with that? Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is, because you present something doesn't mean they take it when it's presented. And I reflect back in my life when the parenting skills was being used by my grandparents and they were providing a platform, it went in and got stuck. It went in. It showed up years later. Parenting skills is understanding the process that your children go through. And they don't necessarily get it when you say they're supposed to have it. Because I sound like my grandfather. I ain't gonna wear short pants with black socks. But I sound like him. And I sound like him because right is right and wrong is wrong. And the beautiful thing about having him as a father principle is he was honest. He was honest. So as I deal with my children today, I'm honest. This is who I am. This is what I believe. This might not be the best way, but it's a way I know work, and it's the one I have to give. Yeah. Children. Gifts. You ever be at a meeting and a woman say, you know, I want my children back. She's been clean 6 months, 9 months, a year. I want my kids back. And you start praying to help her. All right, sister, we want your kids back too. Then she get them. They won't sit down. They sharing during the time the speaker's sharing. They waste coffee all over the fucking floor. They knock the sugar over, and that's good. Because they is where they are supposed to be, because they existed without parenting skills. Now you there in the meeting, who's further in the process. And she's a struggling woman with a 3-year-old boy, a 4-year-old boy, a 6-year-old boy. Tell him, come here, shorty. Sit right here. He don't have no father figure. He's being parented the best the mother's giving her based on what she got at that time. And use a father. Then act like it. Start showing the young people what it's like to grow up. If they choose it, fine. If they don't, they won't, because they didn't see it. That's what I learned about parenting. Not only do I parent my children, I teach kids and their teenagers in high school. I am a high school teacher. Yeah, we're allowed to cuss. If you got a 17-year-old, he come home and say, teacher, cuss daddy, pray to God. Give the teacher at least one pass. Because young people have to develop, and a lot of young people like myself are experienced learners. You say the stove is hot, that don't mean I ain't gonna touch it. That mean you said it was hot. My experience comes in when I put my hand over there and I touch it. Why? Because there's a rebellious nature in my underdevelopment as a child. It's not personal. Your children are doing well in school, and I'm proud of that. But don't think too much of yourself. Because there's a lot of parents who's fighting just as hard as you. Kids ain't going to do shit. Because it's a choice. My son looked me in the face. My son, an all-county basketball player, led the county in scoring. Colleges was calling every other thing. Athletics is my family. Right? In January, my son was on honor roll. February the 10th, he turned 18, and he said, I'm going my way. I said, what? Now, his mother's dead. His mother died from breast cancer years ago. I got him at 12 just with me. And we were doing this father and son thing. And somewhere down the line, he decided he won't do it no more. The issue wasn't that he's on honor roll. He's all county. Colleges are calling. Still. He left the house on February 10th. This is what happened. He started to say he wanted to stay out later. So he would leave on Friday and call back on Sunday. I said, David. You done lost your fucking mind. Do you understand that parents don't sleep until their children is inside the house? I don't care how old they are. Are you crazy? Well, Dad, I'm not no little kid. I said, David, listen to this one. If you think what's on the other side of the door is better than this side, go out there and leave your key. David stayed out 3 days, and my brother called me. I was on my way home from work. My brother called me, and his daughter wouldn't listen. 19 years old, no high school diploma, one baby. She lives in the projects on Section 8. She wanted to do her thing. So David, in his infinite wisdom, end up with her. So I go call my brother. I'm going by the house, and I'm getting my son. Look what's happening. I'm interfering with the process. I think I'm helping him because I love him. He never knew a project experience. I always did fairly well. So he lived that way. Huh? So I say, I'm going to go get my son because he don't need to experience that for his development. Why do you need to do bad to do good? Huh? That's my thinking. His process is, because of his development and his rebellion, he has to go that way. A lot of people don't understand. Talk to people in the fellowship. Man, you go get your son, man. Oh, man, father's going to get your son, because that's the way I talk. I speak at men's raps constantly, and I tell men all the time, listen, I don't care what you're doing in your recovery. If your kids ain't in it, you ain't doing nothing in your recovery. I mean, what's the point? Child support is not a check. Brothers get angry, and then they meet me at the door and say, thanks, brother. Because if you don't tell me the truth and I don't tell you the truth, we got nothing. Don't tell me about you with this girl and she got two fucking kids. We're yours. Don't tell me that shit. We either going to live by the principle or quit talking that dumb stuff. So I jumped in the middle of the process. I went and got my son. I called him. He called over to the house that I was there sitting there waiting on him. And I said, boy, where you at? He said, I'm with my friend. I said, you tell your friends, drop you off at the house. I'll be home in 20 minutes. I get home before him. He comes in the house and says, look, Dave, I only want you to do two things. Go upstairs and take a shower and go to bed. He goes up, take a shower, go to bed, goes to school for the next couple of days, and he's out again. Right? And I realized it wasn't his fault. He has decided to be a part of a process. I want you to understand the spirit of belonging. I want you to understand the spirit of independence. The spirit of generosity. I want you to understand that even though it may be logical for him to come home, go through the process, go to college, do the things that I want him to do, his journey sometimes take him to the seat of rebellion. And he's not disagreeing with me because I'm wrong. He disagreeing with me because I'm his father. Anybody in here not a newcomer? You ever be in your business meeting? Newcomers vote the opposite of you. Not because they know what the fuck they talking about. They do it because they think you know anything. He think he know anything. I ain't voting that way. And then y'all looking for another meeting place. My responsibility and my role as his father is to protect him, provide for him, discipline him, set the table, and give him the choice. I didn't speak as a mother. Women or men are constructed very differently. You see the world the way you see it. I respect that. I don't see that. I'm a male, I'm a father, and I deal with my son from the position of a parent, but a branch of the parenthood, and it's called father. And number one thing for sons to do is honor their father and their mother, but honor their father. If their fathers is presenting things that's in their best interest, they should honor it, not agree or disagree with it. Kids are a lot like new people. They really don't understand that you accept things that you don't agree with. When I told them between Sunday and Thursday to come in the house no later than 10:30, and on Friday and Saturday, 11:30, and if you was going to stay at the movie, give me a call. He felt at going on 18, this is modern times. We don't do that. That's old school, Dad. You were all county. You led the state in scoring. You were on honor roll every year. You left on February the 10th, and on the 31st of March, I got a letter from the school. You are ready to miss 10 days. I don't want to deprive you of anything. I'm further along in the journey. Huh? I know what happened. I hope I don't hurt anybody's ears with that. He got a piece of pussy. He lost his mind. All of us are old enough to know there's only two things that make men lose their mind. He ain't doing drugs. So you know what he doing. So he got a girl pregnant. That wasn't his girlfriend. I said, Dave, you got to watch the kind of people you messing with, Dave. I called the girl's mom. I said, we got to come sit down and have a talk. She said, the Colts was playing. She said, can you wait till after the game? I said, boy, what have you gotten yourself into? He's sitting on the step with his head down. Now, you got to know your child. And I know I'm a whiner. You got to know your child. He said, Dad, I had sex with her for the first time on January the 2nd. Right? And like we went to the clinic on the 19th and she was pregnant. Right? And like my calculations, that might not be my child. I looked at my son. And I know my son. He said on the second they went to the clinic on the third, and he said, I told her, since we had unprotected sex, let's go to the clinic and take the morning after pill. I looked at my son. I said, David, you ain't that fucking smart. Who do you think you're talking to? You a parent that don't know your kid? My son is not smart enough to have unprotected sex and say the next day, let's go to a damn clinic. Roll student. So I said, all right, Dave. He said, Dad, I'm not lying. Said, all right, Dave. This is how I knew he my son. I said, David, after you had sex with the girl and you find out that the girl was pregnant and you don't like the girl, she's not your girlfriend, this and that, right, Dad, she crazy. I said, yeah, okay. I said, how many times did you have sex after that? He said, four. She said, yeah. That's my son, retarded as hell. This how I know he's my child. That's the kind of stuff I did. Bizarre shit. It defies logic. So here you are rationalizing with a kid that's irrational. David, nah, brother. Left up to your own devices, you are going to self-destruct. I love you. If you're a millionaire, I love you. If you're a bum in a shelter, I love you. That is not questionable. My argument with you is you don't have a plan. We had the 12 steps to use in our life. I talked to him about being honest as he could. I talked to him about being open-minded and hearing information, whether you agree with it or not. I talked to him about the power to have willingness to go past just instant desires. I talked to him about that. Maybe they'll kick in 5, 10, 15 years from now. So I didn't come here to present a perfect dad, wonderful children. I came here to present I'm human and they are too. And in parenting, you understand that you do the best with what you got left. Not what you want or what you thought you had. You only can do the best with what you got left. And what you've given them is a legacy of things you may have heard from parents, grandparents, the members in NA that's in the process, and you share those things with your kids that allow them to get down the road. That's why I'm a good parent. I'm a good parent because I accept the reality that I don't know everything. I'm a good parent because I'm willing to do different strategies to get the same result. We don't have to win all the time. What we have to do is our best. I ain't never been perfect, but I'm human. And look, God loved me so much, he sent me to Narcotics Anonymous. That's what I learned. Okay. So I relish in the opportunity to share on parenthood and recovery. I've been in this fellowship, like I say, 20 years, and dig this. We done went from entertainment. We're not in the fucking tame you. It's time for us to be more enlightening. It's time for us, when we really talk about those issues, to help people along. We come for help. And some of us who in some areas are doing better, we need to help. We need to stop presenting, I'm cool. I know it all. I got it all together. Huh? People watch you. New people watch. The kids on your block watch you. Parent. Huh? Are you going out there and telling them, because I don't have a garage where I live at now, divorce will do things to you? Do you go out there and tell those kids, get your ass off my car, and then go teach them how to play basketball? They wrong. What the hell are you doing on my Mercedes? You know I got feelings about that shit. But I do take the time to show them some things. So parenting is a principle. Huh? It's not, you can be biological, the mother or the father, and your child's best interest may be with somebody else. I am an example of that. My mother never made it out of addiction. My father was in and out to his death. And like I say, there are family members that once I came to Narcotics Anonymous, they are in the fellowship too with multiple years and a decade or so. So I'm real grateful that I met you. I'm real grateful that God spared me. And I always share, why would God spare you if there is no purpose? He could have saved somebody else. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful this committee thought that I would be a good person to share on Parenthood and Recovery. I'm grateful that I stayed in this fellowship long enough to meet me. I'm grateful that I made some friends along the way. I have some people that love me. And I'm most grateful that I have a God that I understand. And he understands me. And the number one thing he understands about me is that Crawford will do some bizarre shit. So I'm going to put him in a place with a bunch of people that do bizarre shit. And we are going to make it a day at a time. So don't fret with what your kid's doing. Your topic shouldn't be what they're doing. The topic is, what are you doing? And if you have done everything that you can do, you are getting on their fucking nerves. Yeah. 30 more seconds. When you say the same thing over and over, it irritates them. And the only reason they don't punch in your fucking mouth is because they respect you. They don't hear that. It starts to be noise. Take out the trash. Take out the trash. Take out the trash. Well, I'm going to take something from you. I didn't want that shit anyway. No. Son, listen. I got rules, man. And everywhere you go in life, they're going to have rules. And if you don't understand, stop from your father. The only thing that's going to stop you in the street is a police officer. And when you get there, you're going to do what they say. And I don't take collect calls. So, listen, I'm grateful. I've said that. The reality is we have to step up our game as people in our development. Our children look to us. Other people in the fellowship children look to us. Be the best you can whenever you're around them. You're not perfect, but do your best. Huh? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I try to carry this message and work it in all my affairs. Thanks for letting me share.